experiment, but Spencer, I think if we do get this thing flying, it's going to be fast. Faster than even our scout ships. That gave me a shiver to imagine. Rig grinned, holding up his notebook, then put it aside and dug in with his wrench to carefully begin disassembling the atmospheric scoop. I watched for a moment, holding a wire in the cramped confines, amazed. Rig seemed happy. We'd been friends for over a decade, and I was sure I'd seen him happy before. It was just that no moments stood out. My memories of Rig were always of him being anxious, or nervous for me, or, occasionally, resigned to some terrible fate. Today, though, he was actively smiling as he worked, his face smeared with the grease we'd been applying between wire replacements. And that did something to help me push through the loss that still hung over me, the feelings of having failed my flightmates. "Where did you get all these wires anyway?" I said, getting back to work. I thought I was the one who was going to be performing the petty theft. "No theft required," he said. "Zyming, that's the woman supervising my internship, gave me an entire bundle of them and some machinery to work on for practicing wire replacements. I figure, what better practice than to use it all on a real ship?"
"Nice. So it's going well?"
Rig, oddly, blushed, though the color was difficult to pick out through the grease, and by the glow of my reddish-orange light line. I knew him well enough to see it.
"What?"
I demanded.
"You know M-Bot's cockpit design?"
he said. "What part?"
"The pilot seat and controls are on their own frame," Rig said. "It's complicated, but it reminds me of a gyroscope. I think the seat is made to be able to rotate with the direction of G-forces. You know how it's really hard on a human to take G-forces that push the blood into the head or the feet?"
Yeah, trust me, I know.
"Well, what if your seat rotated during difficult and extended burns, so that the force was always in the direction easiest on the body, directly backward? That could really help with high-speed maneuvers."
"Huh," I said, interested. But more interested by the way Rig lit up as he talked.
"Well, I drew some schematics of that in my notebook, and well, Zyming might have seen them and assumed they were my own designs. She might think I'm a genius."
"You are."
"Not really," he said, blushing again. "I just copied what I saw. Whoever built M-Bot is the genius."
"You figured it out," I said.
"That takes as much genius."
"It really doesn't," he said, then twisted off a nut with his wrench.
"But, well, lie or not, I think this is a way we can get this technology to the DDF. Maybe I can figure out how this atmospheric scoop works and take that in as well. If I'm careful and don't make my discoveries look too suspicious, we'll be able to help the fight against the Krell without exposing M-Bot."
"And you get to be a hero," I said.
"A fake one," he said, but it did feel nice.
I grinned, then got back to work on my wires. Maybe we could bring this all to the DDF and prevent more pilots from dying. Thinking of that immediately put a damper on my mood. No matter what I could do for future pilots, I would still carry my feelings of frustration and pain for the flightmates I'd already lost. I redirected my thoughts back to the secret of what had really happened to my father, trying to think of every reason why the DDF would cover it up. That kept me occupied for a half hour or so, until a ding rang up from the cockpit.
"Diagnostic finished,"
M-Bot said in his helpful, and not nearly dangerous enough, voice. It echoed through the innards of the ship.
"What did I miss?"
"Discussions of Rig being a hero," I said, "and another about why the DDF would keep a secret. They claim my father fled from battle, but I know he didn't."
"I still think you're jumping to conclusions," Rig said. "Why bother with a large-scale cover-up to specifically smear a single pilot's reputation?"
"What if my father
was shot down by accidental friendly fire, I said. In the chaos of the fight, someone shot him by mistake, and they didn't want that embarrassment on their permanent record. So they claimed my father was fleeing and forced Cobb to lie about what happened. Rig grunted, loosening another nut.
That one's almost plausible, more than the others. But it still has problems. Wouldn't the other pilots notice?
Cobb said there were 4 people in the flight who saw it happen. We don't know how deep the cover-up goes, I said. And though the reports had names redacted, I'm pretty sure by now that Ironsides was the flight leader. That would explain why she's so determined to keep me out of the DDF. Maybe she's worried I'll expose the truth, that her incompetent leadership led to one of her pilots getting shot down by accident.
You're stretching. You don't even know for sure if the official report is a lie.
He nodded.
He kind of halfway sort of nodded, but it might have been a random twitch.
Then give me a better theory for why they'd lie to everyone, I demanded.
I can give one, Embot said cheerfully. The greater argument for human-originated chaos.
The what?
Rig asked.
The greater argument for human-originated chaos. Gaffhawk. It's an extremely popular and well-documented phenomenon. There's a great deal of writing in my memory banks about it.
And it is? I asked, plugging in a wire. He often said strange things like this, and I'd learned to just go along with it. In part because, well, I found the way he talked interesting. He saw the world in such an odd way. I kept hoping one of these conversations would dig up some useful information out of his memory banks, though the way they tended to frustrate Rig was a nice bonus as well.
Gaffhawk is related to free will,
Embot said.
Humans are the only creatures that have free will. We know this because you declared that you have it, and I, being a soulless machine, must take your word that you are correct. By the way, how does it feel to be self-deterministic?
I don't know, I said.
Does it feel like tasting ice cream?
Not really like that.
I wouldn't know, of course,
Embot said.
I wasn't built with the ability to comprehend flavors or make decisions for myself.
You make decisions all the time, Rig said, wagging his wrench in the direction of the cockpit.
I don't make decisions. I simply execute complex subroutines in my programming, all stemming from quantifiable stimuli. I am perfectly and absolutely rational.
Rational, I said, in that you keep asking for mushrooms.
Yup, he said. Say, do you suppose anyone makes mushroom-flavored ice cream?
Sounds gross, I said. I'd only had ice cream once, when I was a child and my father had the merits to get some. Why would we eat something like that?
I don't know, Embot said. Greater argument for human-originated chaos, remember?
Which you haven't explained yet, Rig noted.
Oh, I thought it was obvious.
Embot sounded surprised.
Humans have free will. Free will is the ability to make irrational decisions, to act against stimuli. That makes it impossible for a rational AI to ever fully anticipate humans. For even if I had perfect understanding of your inputs, you could still do something completely unpredictable.
I turned my head toward Rig, frowning, trying to make sense of that.
It means you're weird,
Embot added. I said.
Don't worry. I like you anyway.
You said this was a popular theory? Rig asked.
With me,
Embot said.
And there's a lot written about it?
Rig said.
By me,
Embot said.
Earlier today, I wrote 7,000 pages. My processors work very quickly, you realize. Granted, most of what I wrote is just humans are weird, repeated 3,756,932 times.
You were supposed to be running a diagnostic, Rig said.
Rig, that took like 30 seconds,
Embot said.
I needed something more engaging to occupy my time.
Rig sighed,
dropping another nut into the cup beside him.
You realize this thing is insane.
As long as you can make it fly, I don't mind. You can make it fly, right?
I'm not insane,
M-Bot noted. Well, Rig said, ignoring the machine. Once we get these wires changed, you'll need to service the intakes, the thrusters, and the rest of the joints. I'll look over the atmospheric scoop while you do that, then break down his grav caps and check them over. If that's all in order, then the internals are in good shape. From there, we have to figure out how to deal with that wing.
I've got a portion of my internship coming up that deals with design and fabrication, however. And I think I might be able to sneak away to order new parts for that wing.
Though I might set you at pounding some bent portions back into shape. That will get us everything but the big one. The boosters, I said. M-Bot had room for three, a large one and two smaller ones.
I think he'll fly fine with one central booster. But there's no way I'll be able to order something that large fabricated. So if we want to fly this thing, you're going to need to find me a replacement. A standard DDF model should work. Anything from an A-17 to an A-32 would fit in that space, with a little work on my part.
I sighed, resting against the stone. Finally, I wiggled out from under the ship to get a drink. A new booster. That wasn't the sort of thing I could find in a junkyard, or even steal off a random hover car. That was grade A military tech. I'd have to steal a starfighter, which would be above petty larceny. It would be actual treason. No, I thought. Fixing M-Bot was a cool dream, but I couldn't go that far. I sighed, taking a long drink from my canteen, then checked my clock. 0605. Rig wiggled out himself, grabbing his own canteen. I whistled to Doomslug, who whistled back in a perfect imitation. I need to get going, I told Rig. I need time to slip into the women's room and cleanse before class.
Sure,
Rig said, clanging the wing of the ship with his wrench.
Though I don't know why you'd bother doing it there, as you could use the ship's cleanser.
It has a cleanser? I asked, stopping in place.
It has full biofacilities, including waste reclamation, as part of the pod in the cockpit. I hauled up some soap yesterday and got the system working. The controls are the little keypad in the left rear of the cockpit. The canopy should dim for privacy, assuming you can trust the thing not to make fun of you while cleansing.
Why would I make fun of her? M-Bot said. The frailties of human existence, and stenches caused by their inefficient generation of biological energy, are no laughing matter.
I just smiled. I was tired of sneaking into the cleanser at the base, constantly worried that Admiral Ironsides would use it as an excuse to oust me. It makes sense you'd have a cleanser, I said to M-Bot as I climbed into the cockpit. You said you're a long-range scouting and stealth vessel, right?
Equipped for deep space missions.
With four destructors, Rig noted from down below, and advanced atmospheric scoops and an extremely fast design. He's a fighter spin, but probably a long-distance one, as he said. So you had to be able to care for your pilot long-term, I said, closing the canopy. You traveled between the stars?
Cytonic hyperdrive is offline,
M-Bot said. But how did you do it? I asked. What is a cytonic hyperdrive? And what were you scouting for anyway? The ship fell uncharacteristically silent. The cockpit, as promised, dimmed fully as I flipped a switch on the panel that Rig had indicated.
I have no records of any of it, M-Bot said softly. If I could feel fear, Spin, I'd be afraid of that. I'm not an autopilot. I don't fly myself, that's forbidden, save for very slow maneuvering. So all I really am is a repository of knowledge. That's what I'm good for.
Except you've forgotten it all.
Almost everything,
he whispered.
Except my orders.
Lie low, take stock. Don't get into any fights.
and an open database for cataloging local fungi. That's all I am now.
I'm hoping Rig will be able to repair your memory banks, so we can recover what you lost, I said. If not, we'll refill your banks with new memories. Better ones.
Data doesn't suggest either is possible.
Data doesn't need to, I said. You'll see.
Gaffhawk, Embot said. I'd let you read the 7,000 pages I wrote, but I am programmed to avoid making humans feel inferior for their incredible weirdness.
I lowered the seat into a bed, then located the cleansing pod at the rear of the cockpit. It wasn't obvious, but I now knew what to look for. A hole I could open and roll myself into. The long, narrow cleansing pod extended farther into the fuselage. I stripped down, stuffed my clothing into the clothing bay, then positioned my feet toward the hole and slid in on the rollers. I closed the latch by my head with the press of a button at my side, then activated the cleanser. I kept my eyes closed as I was bathed in suds and flashes of light. It felt decadent to have my own cleanser. Back in my neighborhood, the three cleansers had been shared among dozens of apartments. Your daily usage was precisely scheduled.
I think I made you feel bad anyway, didn't I?
Embot asked. I wasn't a particularly shy person, but his voice made me blush. I wasn't used to being talked to while in the cleanser. I'm fine, I said, once the cleanser finished my face. I like the way you talk. It's different. Interesting.
I didn't invent Gaffhawk to make you feel bad, he said. I needed an explanation for why you said things that aren't true.
You really hadn't ever heard of lying before?
I don't know. Maybe I had, and it's simply gone.
He sounded fragile. How could a large, heavily armored starfighter sound fragile?
You're the only source of information I have,
Embot said.
If you tell me things that aren't true, what can I commit to my memory banks? This puts me at risk of retaining false data.
That's a risk we all live with, Embot, I said. We can't know everything, and some of what we think we know is going to turn out to be false.
That doesn't frighten you?
Of course it does. But if it helps, I'll try not to lie to you.
It does. Thank you.
He fell silent, and so I relaxed, enjoying an extra-long, luxurious cleansing, during which I imagined scenarios of flying Embot into battle with guns blazing, saving my flight from certain doom, like Joan of Arc on her loyal steed. They were good daydreams, even if my steed kept asking for mushrooms. Chapter 23.
All right,
Cobb's voice said in my ear as the group of us hovered outside a holographic battlefield.
I'm almost convinced you won't run nose first into the first piece of debris that falls past you. I think you lot might just be ready to learn some advanced weapons techniques.
Even still, 2 weeks after losing him, I expected Bim to pipe up eagerly and ask after destructors. When he didn't, I said it instead, in his memory.
Destructors? No, Cobb said. Today, we will train with the IMP.
Oh, right. We'd spent so much time training with the light lances, I'd almost forgotten we had a third weapon, which could knock down enemy shields. While I waited for Cobb to send today's wingmate pairings, I switched the radio to a private channel and called Hurl. I almost thought he was going to let us do guns, eh, Hurl? Hurl only grunted. Made me think of Bim, I said. Wish we'd at least helped him choose a call sign, you know? I'm with Quirk today, Hurl said, as Cobb highlighted us in pairs on our sensor screens. Hurl out. She killed the channel. I felt my face grow cold and gritted my teeth, silently cursing Jerkface for outing my heritage. While I was used to this kind of thing, I'd liked Hurl. The fun-loving, eager girl had almost seemed like a friend. I moved my ship over next to Ned, my wingmate for the day. Ahead of us, a group of Krell ships appeared in the sky and began to fly through lazy patterns. Debris fell, mostly large, fiery chunks that dropped from above quickly, trailing smoke.
All right, Cobb said. Basic shield usage. Spin, give us a rundown.
He did this occasionally, testing our knowledge. Shipboard shields can absorb roughly 80 KUs of energy before they get overwhelmed and break, I said. That's around 2 to 3 shots from a destructor, a small debris strike, or a glancing collision. If your shield goes down, you'll have to reignite it, which uses power from your booster. That means losing thrust and maneuverability for a good half a minute.
Good. Amphisbina, what did she miss?
I was reasonably impressed that he could pronounce Arturo's two-headed dragon call sign thing.
Not much, Arturo said. Always warn your wingmate if your shield breaks so they can cover you with their destructors while you reignite. Not that we know much about using destructors. You pull the trigger, smart boy, Cobb said. Doesn't take a brain to use a destructor. The IMP, though, that's another matter. Inverted Magellan Pulse. It breaks any shield, including your own, within 50 meters.
50 meters, FM said softly. That's very close range.
Ridiculously close range, Cobb said. You'll have to practically be smelling Krell BO before you can IMP them.
Sir, Jorgen said. I'm worried about the flight's ability to get in that close.
If only we'd just spent a month drilling on maneuvering and close-quarters light lance grappling while the other cadets played popgun, Cobb snapped. Look, Krell shields are strong. You fight my way, and you completely negate their advantage. And if you don't want to fight my way, you can go suck on hot rocks and become an algae farmer.
With that, he threw us into it. And I didn't complain. After so many weeks practicing what amounted to a bunch of fancy turns, I was eager to get to something that felt even a little like real combat. We were each assigned to a mock Krell ship flying in a simple pattern. Our job was to approach as a wingmate pair flying exactly 55 meters apart. We would cut in across the Krell ship's path, and one of us would engage their IMP. Then, we'd stop and perform a quick reignition drill. We didn't get to shoot the Krell down. We just practiced IMPing their shields over and over. And even with the Krell ships flying in simple patterns, it was hard. You had to get in so close, you felt like you were going to slam right into them. Turned out 50 meters was just under the threshold for a comfortable pass. The first 20 times or so, I pulled away too quickly, and the IMP broke my shield, but not the enemy's. Swoop in. Engage IMP, dodge out, reignite. Repeat.
You know, Ned said as we flew, I'd enjoy shooting a few of those goobers down. Don't extrapolate, Nedder, Cobb said in our ears. Today, the exercise is about knocking out their shields. That's it. But we'll get to destroying them later. These next few days, we're going to focus on basic IMP strategies.
Ned sighed on the group line.
A few days of just doing this? Does anyone else find that idea boring?
A few of the others called out agreements, but I didn't. Every moment flying, even in simulation, was a joy. This explosion of speed, this precision. This was freedom. I remembered my father better when I flew. That spark of anticipation in his eyes, the tilt of his head looking skyward, and longing to return. Each time I flew, I shared something new with him, something personal. Ned and I did a few more IMP runs, and oddly, on my turn, the Krell ship flew out of line and forced me to chase it down harder. That wasn't the normal exercise, but it did challenge me. When I finally IMP'd it, I found myself breathing hard, but grinning at the thrill of it. Tell me that last one wasn't fun, I said on the private line to Ned. I looked across to where he flew beside me, the hologram reproducing him, helmet and all. He was a bit of a brute, oversized, with a face that seemed too big for his head. I couldn't imagine how it must feel to squeeze into one of these cockpits at 193 centimeters like he was.
Fun is sitting at home, he said, with your feet up, enjoying a mug of something warm. All of this is over my head.
Oh, please, I said. I'm not buying your act, Ned.
What? He said. I'm just a normal guy.
Who grew up in the deep caverns?
I actually grew up here, in Alta.
What? Really? I said, surprised.
Yeah. I went to school with Jorgen and Arturo down below, but my parents keep the orchard.
So you're not just some normal guy, I said. You were schooled with the elite, and your parents volunteered to do the toughest job on Detritus. Beyond that, how many brothers do you have who are pilots?
Dunno,
he said.
Can't really count that high.
You do the worst job of playing dumb I've ever seen.
Then I can't even do that right, he said. Exact proof, right?
I rolled my eyes as we joined another run. Ned seemed determined to pretend he was some kind of big dumb crony, but he overdid it, likely by intent. Even rocks weren't as stupid as Ned acted sometimes. On the battlefield, Hurl and Kimmelin zipped past a Krell ship. Hurl got her IMP off just right, but Kimmelin had not only been flying too close, so she got caught in the blast too. She panicked when her shield went down and veered to the side, which smashed her into the Krell ship. I winced. It had been a while since any of us had made a mistake that blatant. Ned whistled slowly, then hit the comm.
Nice explosion, Quirk. 7 out of 10. Try to spin your wreckage a little more next time you fall.
Bless your stars. She muttered it, which was practically cussing from Kimmelin.
Heh,
Ned said. You shouldn't taunt her, I said on the private line to him. She's trying hard.
Everyone needs someone to blow steam at, even her, especially her. She's so uptight sometimes. I think she must have done her belt up 2 extra notches.
She's just from a different cavern, I said. Her culture makes her more polite.
She's nervous, he said. She knows she's our worst pilot. Ignoring it will only make her more nervous, trust me.
Huh. And what do you think of Hurl?
She's good, he said, but not as good as she thinks she is.
He grew silent for a moment.
She used to pretend all this was a game. She was an athlete, you know.
Like, a real one?
Yeah, dig ball player. Carrier position, one of the best in the student league. Seems like everything's a competition to her. But then we lost Bim and Morningtide, so now she's gone all quiet. She doesn't know how to react now that she can't see flying as a game.
I thought you said you were stupid.
Dumb as cold rocks.
And your insightful read on our companions?
Just making small talk. Saying whatever pops in my head, you know? You're lucky it made any sense whatsoever. Usually it comes out as grunts.
Oh, please. We flew a few more exercises, during which Ned made some pointed grunting noises. Seriously, I couldn't tell if he was childish or an elaborate prankster. Or, well, he was certainly both of those things. But maybe something else, too. Cobb eventually called for us to line up, then take runs one at a time, so he could watch us each and give us specific feedback on how to improve. And though I was enjoying this, I was glad for the break. It was grueling work. I watched each of the solo runs, and we were actually starting to look like real pilots. The way Hurl spun after her dodging Krell was impressive. And while FM could be too careful, her flying had an inspiring precision to it. Kimmelin did her solo run next, and she actually managed to IMP the Krell. I smiled and called her when she came back. Hey, I said over the private line, good job. I didn't crash, she replied.
So that's new.
You almost never crash. I almost never win a drill either. We've all got talents. Yours is sniping from a distance. Mine is swearing at people.
Swearing at people? You almost never.
Shut it, Scudface.
She giggled, which made me smile. Maybe Ned was right. Maybe she did need a chance now and then to blow off steam.
Now, dear, Kimmelin said, far be it from me to offer criticism, but that was hardly an imaginative cuss. I've heard that word, oh, every day since leaving Bountiful Cavern. Where I come from, you need to be circumspect.
What's the point of that?
Well, you can't have people realizing you're disparaging them. That would be embarrassing.
So you insult people without insulting them?
It's our way. But don't worry if that doesn't make sense to you. Personally, I think it's inspiring that you're comfortable being the way you are. It must have given you so many chances to learn life's lessons.
That's... Huh. I grinned. I like that.
Thank you.
Our line crackled, and Jerkface's obnoxious voice came on.
Quirk, Spin, are you two watching Hurl's performance? You should be paying attention.
I'm watching, I snapped.
Good. Because from my vantage, it looked like you were sitting around gabbing and giggling.
Jorgen, Kimmelin said, I just want to let you know how you're regarded as a flat leader. As the saint is goodly and just, I'm certain you'll be rewarded with everything you deserve in life.
Thanks, Quirk. Stay sharp. Jorgen out.
I watched until the light indicating that he was on the line winked off. Then I burst into a fit of laughter. That was the most glorious thing I've ever heard in my entire life.
Well, Kimmelin said, you are known to be a tad dramatic at times, but I suppose I can accept the compliment.
She flew off to do another run, as Cobb wanted to coach her on the way she used her booster. She almost doesn't belong here, I whispered to myself. It's like she's both too good for us and not quite good enough at the same time.
That's contradictory,
Embot's voice said in my ear.
So perfectly human.
Yeah, I said, then sat up straight. Wait, Embot?
Yes.
Embot?
Not that I mind being screamed at, as my emotions are synthetic, but would you mind-
How? I said. I hunched down in my seat, whispering quietly, can the others hear you?
I've infiltrated your lines and sent my communications directly into your helmet, he said. Your wireless communications emitter gives me a focal point to use for isolating you.
My what?
In your bag. I think you set it next to your seat.
The personal radio that Cobb had given me.
As I've said, your people's communications methods are quite primitive,
Embot continued,
which I find curious, since the rest of your technology, save your lack of brilliant artificial intelligences, seems relatively similar to my own. Well, and you're also missing cytonic hyperdrives, and proper fungal documentation techniques, so I guess you're actually backward in all the important areas.
I thought you were worried about being discovered, I whispered. Why are you talking to me here?
I'm a stealth ship, Spencer, he said. I'm fully capable of hacking communications lines without exposing myself. But I warn you, I don't trust this DDF of yours.
You're smart not to, I said honestly. But you do trust me, even though I lied to you?
You remind me of someone I've forgotten.
That is kind of contradictory, Embot.
No, it's not. I said it, and I'm 100% rational.
I rolled my eyes.
That's called logic.
He waited a moment, then added, softer.
I'm super good at it.
Ahead, Kimmelin finished her run with the Krell ship escaping. She never fired her IMP. But she could have shot the thing out of the air, I thought, irritated on her behalf, assuming its shield was down. Cobb kept saying we needed fundamentals, and I supposed that made sense. It still didn't quite seem fair, like we weren't using her to her fullest.
Spin,
Cobb said.
You're up. Up for what?
Embot asked me.
What are we doing? I don't have a video feed, just audio.
We're flying, I whispered, then hit my booster and soared into the holographic debris, which was constantly renewed with new debris falling from the sky above. My target appeared, a Krell ship weaving between pieces of junk. I leaned in and chased after it, overburning through the junk. Almost close enough. A light started blinking on my dash. I had a tail? What? This was supposed to be a solo, one-on-one exercise. Apparently Cobb intended to make this more difficult for me. So be it. I rolled in a spinning dodge as the tail started firing its destructors. My maneuver saved me, but let the target get ahead of me. No, you don't, I thought, hitting my overburn and blasting after it, taking a corner at speed and gaining ground. The tail stuck to me, continuing to fire. I took a hit that nearly overwhelmed my shields, but I focused on the ship in front, which dove downward. So I cut my acclivity ring and slammed on my overburn, turning into a gut-wrenching dive. Lights flashed on my control panel to warn that without my acclivity ring, nothing would prevent me from slamming right into the ground.
I don't know who you're fighting, Embot said, but those warning beeps indicate that you're not doing a good job.
As a companion to his words, the line on the top of my canopy warned that I'd just overwhelmed my grav caps, and the G-force indicator started to flash red. In a real ship, I'd be hit with all those G-forces, which, in a dive, would push the blood to my head and make me start to red out.
Try not to die, Embot noted. I don't want to be left alone with Raj. He's boring.
I passed into the trail of another chunk of falling, burning metal, sparks bouncing off my shield, making it light up and crackle with energy. I'd lost the tail, which had fallen far behind, but I wasn't close enough to the one in front. It can't keep diving, I thought. We're approaching the ground. I gritted my teeth, then lanced the chunk of debris right as my target cut to the side and flew back up. I swung all the way around the debris, then re-engaged my acclivity ring and hit my overburn again. The maneuver made me swoop in a complete circle and dart upward, right past the Krell ship. I blasted my IMP, then the flashing line on the canopy went full red.
Ha! I said over the group line. Your children will weep tonight, you holographic Krell bastard.
Seriously, Spin? FM said. You're saying that ironically, right?
Irony is a coward's weapon, I said, like poison, or the destructors on Jerkface's ship.
Wouldn't a coward use, like, a really big bomb? FM said. Something you could launch from far away? Seems like you'd need to get close for poison.
As our resident expert, Ned said, I'd like to point out that the true coward's weapon is a comfortable couch and a stack of mildly amusing novels. You're still dead, Spin, Jerkface said, flying his ship down near mine. You redlined, possibly causing permanent retinal damage. If this were a real battle, you'd undoubtedly be incapacitated, and your ship would be unshielded. You'd be dead in moments thanks to that Krell tailing you.
Doesn't matter, I said, amused at how offended he sounded. Was he really that threatened by my aptitude? My task was to take down my target's shields, which I did. My tail is irrelevant. Cobb's orders were to IMP that target.
You can't keep cheating the simulation, Jerkface said. You're going to be useless on the battlefield.
I'm not cheating anything. I'm winning.
Whatever, he said. At least you didn't slam your ship into mine this time. Stars help the person who gets between Spin and her attempts to look good in front of everyone.
What? I said, growing annoyed at him. You?
Enough chit-chat, Cobb said. Spin, that was some good flying. But Jorgen is right. You ultimately failed by getting yourself killed.
Told you, Jerkface said. But, I said.
If you've got time to argue, Cobb interrupted. I'm obviously not working you hard enough. The lot of you. Run yourselves through 3 sets of Gamma M formation exercises before dinner. Jorgen, make sure it happens.
Wait, Kimmelin said. You're leaving?
Of course I am, Cobb said. I'm not going to go to dinner late. Cobb out.
Great, Pearl said. Thanks for nothing, Spin. Wait. She couldn't possibly blame me for this extra work instead of Jerkface, could she? Jerkface organized us into a Gamma M formation. a type of monotonous flying exercise. It only took us about 10 minutes, but I spent the entire time stewing, growing more and more frustrated. I even ignored M-Bot as he tried to talk to me. Once it was done, I pulled off my helmet, ignoring Jerkface's call for a lineup and vocal sound off. I needed a break. A moment to myself. I wiped the sweat from my face, pushing back the hair that had been plastered to my forehead by the helmet. Breathe in. Breathe out. My holographic cockpit vanished.
What are you doing?
Jerkface demanded, standing beside my seat.
Do you have your helmet off? I called lineup.
I just need a minute, okay?
Leave me alone. You're disobeying orders.
Oh, Scud. I couldn't deal with him right now. I was embarrassed, exhausted, and increasingly angry. It had been a long training session.
Well,
Jerkface said, looming over me. Nearby, the others disengaged their holograms and stood up, stretching. My face grew cold, and I started to feel myself losing control. Calm, Spencer? You can be calm. I forced down the anger and stood up. I needed to get out of the room.
What do you have to say?
Jerkface demanded.
Why do you keep denying my authority?
What authority? I snapped, grabbing my pack and walking toward the doorway.
Running away,
Jerkface said.
How appropriate.
I stopped in place.
I guess we should expect insubordination from the daughter of Zine Nightshade,
he said.
Your family doesn't exactly have a pedigree for obeying orders, does it?
Coldness in my face. Heat burning deep within. That's it. I turned around slowly, then walked back to Jerkface and quietly dropped my pack. He looked down on me, sneering.
You—
I dropped to one knee, then slammed my fist into his knee. He gasped, and when he buckled over in pain, I pushed upward and rammed my elbow into his gut. The way he grunted felt good, stoking something primal inside me. My elbow knocked the breath out of him, preventing him from shouting out. So while he was stunned, I hooked my ankle around his and sent him slamming backward to the floor. He was bigger than I was. If he recovered, he'd overpower me. So I leaped on top of him and raised my fist, preparing to slam it down into his stupid face. There I stopped, trembling, furious, but somehow also cold and calm, like I got when fighting the Krell. Like I was both absolutely in control, but somehow utterly out of control. Jerkface stared up at me, frozen, seeming completely stunned. That stupid face of his, that sneer. That was how they all talked about me. That was how they all thought of me.
Whoa,
Ned said.
Holy Scud!
I knelt there on top of Jerkface, trembling, with my hand raised.
Really, wow,
Ned said, kneeling down beside us.
Spin, that was incredible. Can you teach me that?
I glanced at him.
We don't learn hand to hand, he said, making some chopping motions. Cobb says it's useless, but what if a Krell tries to, you know, jump me in an alley or something?
Nobody has ever seen a Krell alive, you idiot, Pearl said.
Yeah, but what if that's because, like, they always jump people in alleys, right? You ever think about that?
I looked down at Jerkface. I could suddenly hear myself breathing in quick gasps.
Spin,
Ned said.
It's okay. You were just showing us some hand-to-hand moves, right? How did you do that trip? You're like half as tall as Jorgen is.
Calm. Breathe.
Half as tall, Arturo said. Might I point out that would make her less than a meter tall? Your math is suspect.
I pulled back from Jerkface, who let out a breath and went limp. FM looked horrified, though Ned flashed me a thumbs up. Arturo was shaking his head. Kimmelin stood with her hand to her mouth while Hurl... I couldn't read Hurl. She had her arms crossed, and she studied me, thoughtful. Jorgen stumbled to his feet, holding his stomach.
She struck a superior. She assaulted another member of her flight. She went a little overboard, yeah, Ned said. But I mean, you asked for it, Jorgen. No permanent damage, right? Can't we just forget about it?
Jorgen looked at me, and his expression hardened. No, this wouldn't be forgotten. I was in serious trouble this time. I met his eyes, then, finally, I grabbed my pack and left. Chapter 24. It had been years since I'd lost it that bad. For all my aggressive talk, I really hadn't gotten in that many fights as a kid. I pretended I was some warrior or something. But the truth was that when most kids heard the way I talked, they backed off. And if I was being honest, their hesitance was probably less about being afraid of me and more about being made uncomfortable by my bizarre air of confidence. It worked. It kept them away and didn't put me in situations where I lost control, because I could do that. And not like a brave warrior from the stories, more like a cornered, frenzied rat. Like when I'd caught Finn Elston stealing Riggs' lunch. Finn had ended up with a black eye and a broken arm. I'd had to spend a year on juvenile probation and had been kicked out of judo classes for inappropriate use of violence. I'd been under the age of legal accountability then, so my actions hadn't jeopardized my chances at flight school. Today's assault was different. Today I was old enough to have known better. I sat on one of the benches in the orchard outside the DDF complex. What was Jorgen going to do to me? If he went to the Admiral, I'd be out, done. And I'd deserve it. I really wasn't like a warrior from Grand Grand's stories. Far from it. I could barely function when my friends died in battle, and now I lost control at a couple of petty insults. Why couldn't I control myself? Why did I bristle when Jorgen said those things? I'd lived with them my entire life. As the sky darkened, the closest skylight moving off, I sat there in the orchard, waiting, expecting the MPs to come for me. The only thing I heard was a faint sound, a buzzing, coming from my pack. Frowning, I dug in it until I found the radio. I lifted it up and pressed down the receive button.
Hello?
Embot said.
Spencer, are you dead?
Maybe.
Ooh, like the cat.
What?
I'm not sure, honestly,
Embot said.
But logically, if you're speaking to me, then possibility has collapsed in our favor. Hooray!
I leaned back against the bench and reluctantly chewed on a piece of jerky. If they were going to come for me, they'd come for me. I might as well eat. I didn't feel hungry, but I never did these days. Too much rat.
Are you going to explain to me who you were fighting?
Embot asked. We've talked about it. The Krell.
Well, you've talked around it. But nobody has explained it to me. You just kind of expect me to know.
I forced myself to swallow a piece of jerky and wash it down with some water. Then I sighed, holding the radio to my head. The Krell are aliens.
You're both aliens,
Embot noted.
Technically, since we're not on your home planet, I think.
Either way, they're trying to destroy us. They are these creatures with strange armor and terrible weapons. Our elders say they destroyed our empire in the stars, almost exterminated us. We might be all that's left of humanity, and the Krell are determined to end us. They send flights of ships, some with bombs called lifebusters, that can penetrate down into the caverns and destroy living things there.
Huh,
Embot said.
Why don't they bombard you from orbit?
What?
Not that I'd know anything about things like that, he added, being a non-combat machine. Obviously.
You have 4 guns.
Someone must have stuck those on when I wasn't looking.
I sighed. If you're asking why they don't launch the lifebusters from up high, this planet is surrounded by an ancient defense system. Standard Krell strategy is to fly past that, then swarm in and try to overwhelm our fighters, or sneak in a low strike team. If they either destroy our AA guns or get a bomber in under them, they can eliminate our ability to make new fighters. Then we're done for. The only thing standing between humankind and annihilation is the DDF. I slumped in my seat. Which means, I thought to myself, I should get over my petty squabbles and focus on flying. What was it my father had told me? Their heads are heads of rock, their hearts set upon rock. Set your sights on something higher. Embot? I asked. Do you remember anything about human civilization before the Krell? Do you know what it was like?
My memory banks on such matters are almost entirely corrupted.
I sighed, disappointed, and stuffed away my rations, preparing to walk home. But I couldn't do it. Not while feeling like I was standing with a gun to my head. I wasn't going to go cower in my cave, waiting to be called in to report for discipline. I had to face this head-on and take my punishment. Throwing my pack over my shoulder, I stalked back to the front of Alta Base and past the checkpoint. I took the long way around flight school, the path past the mess hall and launch pad, to get one last glance at my POCO. I passed the silent line of ships, watched over by the ever-diligent ground crews. To my left, I spotted my flight sitting together in the mess hall, eating dinner and laughing. Jorgen wasn't there, but he usually didn't eat with the common rank and file. Besides, he'd probably gone straight to the Admiral to report what I'd done to him. The MPs had long since stopped appearing to escort me off the grounds every evening. We all knew the rules, and they were satisfied I was going to obey them. So nobody forbade me as I went back into the flight school building, where I walked past our room, it was empty, and then stopped by Cobb's office, also empty. Those were basically the only places I'd visited. I took a deep breath, then caught a passing aide and asked if she knew where I could find the Admiral at this hour.
Ironsides? She said, looking me up and down. She doesn't often have time for cadets. Who is your flight instructor?
Cobb. Her expression softened.
Oh, him. That's right. He's got a group of students this semester, doesn't he? It's been a few years. Is this a complaint about him?
Something like that.
Building C, she said, pointing with her chin. You'll find the Admiral's personal staff in the antechamber of Office D. They can move you to another flight. Honestly, I'm surprised it doesn't happen more often. I know he's a first citizen and all, but anyway, good luck.
I walked out of the building. My resolve grew more firm with each step, and I quickened my pace. I would explain what I'd done and demand punishment. I controlled my own destiny, even if that destiny was expulsion. Building C was a daunting brick structure on the far side of the base. Built like a bunker with only slits for windows, it seemed the exact sort of place I'd find Ironsides. How was I going to talk my way past her staff? I didn't want some minor functionary to be the one who expelled me. I peeked in a few windows on the outside of the building, and Ironsides wasn't difficult to find, though her office was shockingly small. A little corner of a room, stuffed with books and nautical memorabilia. Through the window, I saw her glance at the old-fashioned clock on the wall, then close her notebook and stand. I'll catch her on the way out, I decided. I moved to the front of the building to wait, preparing my speech. No excuses, just an outlining of facts. As I waited, I heard another buzzing from my pack. Was that it then? The call for me to report for discipline? I dug the radio out and hit the button. Something odd came through the line. Music. It was incredible. Otherworldly. Unlike anything I'd ever heard before. A large group of instruments playing alongside one another in sweeping, moving, beautiful coordination. Not just a person with a flute or a drum. 100 gorgeous winds, a thrumming pulse of drums. High brass, like the call to arms, but used not as a battle cry, more as a soul for the stately, powerful melody. I stood frozen in place, listening, stunned as it played over the radio. Like light somehow. The beauty of the stars, but as a sound. A triumphant, amazing, incredible sound. It cut off suddenly.
No, I said, shaking the radio. No, give me more.
My recording is corrupted beyond that point,
Embot said.
I'm sorry.
What was it?
The New World Symphony, Dvorak. You asked me what human society was like from before. I found this fragment.
Despite myself, I felt my knees buckle. I sat down on a planter beside the doors into the building, holding the precious radio. We'd created things like that? Sounds so beautiful? How many people had to get together to play that? We had musicians, of course, but before Alta, the gathering of too many people in one place had led to destruction. So by tradition, our performers were limited to trios. This had sounded like hundreds. How much practice, how much time had been devoted to something so frivolous and so wonderful as making music? Set your sights on something higher. I heard voices approaching inside the building. I stuffed the radio away and, feeling foolish, wiped the corners of my eyes. Right. Turning myself in. Time to do this. The door swung open, and Ironsides, wearing a crisp white uniform, stepped out.
I can't understand why your father would think that, Cadet, she was saying. Obviously, I'd have chosen a different instructor for you, if not for your family's own demands.
She stopped in place, noting me on the pathway. I bit my lip. An aide was holding the door open for her, and I realized that I recognized that aide. A brown-skinned young man in a cadet's jumpsuit and a uniform coat. Jerkface. So he had beaten me here.
Admiral, I said, saluting. You, she said, lips turning down. Aren't you forbidden to use DDF facilities after the end of classes? Do I need to summon the MPs to escort you away? Honestly, we need to have a conversation about that. Are you really living in an uncharted cave instead of returning down below?
Sir, I said, still holding the salute. I didn't look at Jorgen. I take full responsibility for my actions. I find that I must formally request that I be subject to... Jerkface slammed the door, making the Admiral jump and me stop talking. He shot me a glare. I continued, looking back at the Admiral. I must formally request that I be subject to disciplinary...
Excuse me, Admiral, Jerkface said quickly. This is about me. Just a minute.
He marched over and grabbed my arm. He flinched as I immediately raised a fist, but I reluctantly let him pull me away. The Admiral didn't seem inclined to wait for two cadets. She walked on with a sniff and climbed into a sleek black hover car waiting on the roadway.
What is wrong with you?
Jerkface hissed at me. I'm turning myself in, I said, lifting my chin. I won't let your side be the only side she hears.
Stars above.
He glanced at the car and lowered his voice.
Go home, Spin. Are you trying to get yourself expelled?
I'm not going to sit around and wait for you to send them after me. I'm going to fight.
Haven't you fought enough for one day?
He rubbed his brow.
Just go. I'll see you tomorrow in class.
What? I was having trouble following his logic. He wanted me to suffer first, perhaps? You're planning to turn me in tomorrow instead? I asked.
I don't intend to turn you in at all. You think I want to lose another member of my flight? We need every pilot.
I put my hands on my hips and studied him. He seemed sincere. Annoyed, but sincere. So, wait, why are you meeting the Admiral?
We host the Admiral once a week for formal dinner at my parents' house in the lower caverns, he said. It's only slightly worse than the other nights, when the National Assembly leaders visit. Look, I'm sorry. I shouldn't have provoked you. A leader needs to pull people after him, not push them before him.
He nodded to me as if that were enough. I wasn't convinced. I'd gotten myself all built up for this, braced for impact,
ready to take a destructor to the face. Now he was simply going to let me go.
I stole your car's power matrix, I blurted out.